May the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, O God, my rock and my redeemer. Shalom all and welcome to our ongoing classes in the series of classical Kabbalah from our text Ohel Moed. This is our Monday night live open forums, which everybody, needless to say, is welcome to join us live. We are, I believe, in the ninth lesson of this series, and of course I'm your host, Ariel Bar-Sadok. You find me online at koshertorah.com. Now, in order to understand tonight's lesson, you're going to have to review the previous few classes. Hopefully it's fresh in your minds. For those of you listening to this recording, just, you know, hit playback or whatever. But anyway, my point is, tonight I want to discuss obviously the continuation of what's written in the text here under the sections entitled The Concealment of Light, The Lessening of the Moon, The Offering of the New Moon Sacrifice, and the secrets of the Leviathan, the Behemoth, and the bull of the Merkava. It's a whole lot of stuff, and God be willing, you'll see how I'm going to try to, well, how the author ties all of this together. We're discussing a concept that in the classical Kabbalah they called du partsufim. Du meaning dual. Now, this dual partsufim, these dual faces, as it would be translated as, obviously is a symbolic and metaphorical way for speaking of the parallel dimensional planes which we call the heavens and the earth. Now, the heavens and the earth are parallel dimensions. Now, we've discussed this in the past, and I'm just going to review it now. We traditionally think of heaven and earth being like one on top of the other, because heavens also translate as sky, and we think of the physical sky, we look up, so we think heaven is up. But we have learned, more so in my meditative classes, that the parallel dimension, we discussed this also in the How to Live the Godly Life series that we're doing at this time on the Tractate Hagigah with the secrets of the Ma'aseh Merkabah, about the different levels of heaven. That which we call the parallel universe is parallel to us. That's which we call heaven, is a parallel universe. It is all around us. It is right next to us. We exist in it now as much as we exist in here now. Prior to this class this evening, as is my tradition, I was watching one of the programs on the Science Channel. And in the program, and I forget what its name was, they asked a number of different scientists, using a big white sheet of paper, what percentage of that would they consider to be what the conscious mind is in relationship to the unconscious mind? And everyone's drawing like this little itsy-bitsy circle representing consciousness as opposed to this vast ocean called the unconscious. They were giving examples of attention. They were showing like how the human eye and cognition grasps only a certain amount of things. Like they would show a flash, you know, boom, of four different images that in the blink of an eye. And then they would, a second later, show another one to ask if it's changed in its position and how, to see if people were able to keep up with it, and apparently they weren't. Whereas at the unconscious level, they are aware of so much more. And when we access the unconscious, we are essentially able to access So much more that consciously we're not able to. There was another program that I was watching on the Science Channel where in which they were experimenting with an idea that was originally expressed in a movie done, I think, three times called The Manchurian Candidate. It was the idea, can you hypnotize someone to commit murder? Well, they took everyday people off the street, and they actually found this one individual who I believe was a corrections officer, and he was very susceptible to hypnosis. And in trial and error, they were actually able to hypnotize him to commit murder and completely and totally forget about it. And they showed this, and they filmed the whole thing, how they did it, etc. and so on. What this is proving to us scientifically is that perception clearly defines our relationship with the world around us. This is vital to understand as a fundamental principle of understanding spirituality and especially meditation. Because when we limit the boundaries of consciousness, we are essentially locking ourselves in a prison of our own making. Just like we can imprison the mind through hypnosis to literally commit murder, you can use those same types of techniques in the masses through entertainment, education, the media, movies, and the like, to subtly, proper word is, brainwash people into literally topsy-turvying the whole world. I was watching a program where in which they were able to hypnotize patients going for root canal at the dentist. Very painful thing. But through hypnosis, they were able to change the perceptions in the brain that the electrical impulses going into the brain, you know, signaling pain, would be interpreted and is received as pleasure. They can do this. They can change our entire perceptions. They can make a good man become a murderer thinking that he's doing a good thing when he's doing something bad because of a change of perceptions. And then forget about it. I tell you, all of society today is brainwashed accordingly. When you see in the world body politic, the whole concept of image over substance, the likes of which we see presented in the present presidential elections, how the liberals and their like always like to present imagery over substance. Oh, I know I'm opening a can of worms. I don't care. That's not my concern. But my point is, we must recognize and understand that we, psychologically as the human race, are subject to perception persuasion. And in the meditative process, this is very, very important. Because where do we want to understand this relationship of du partsufim, this duality of parallel universes? The only reason why you and I don't interact is because we have convinced ourselves over however long we've been alive, that's not real, there's nothing to it. And at the unconscious level, it's so deeply ingrained within us as an impression that the intellectual conviction that it's not true, meaning that we do believe in parallel universes and mind over matter and all that, the intellect doesn't sink deep enough into the layer, the deeper layers of the impressions, the feelings, the images that we've received over a lifetime, which has convinced us otherwise. And that is why we fail to make the ultimate connection to the higher worlds, parallel dimensions, or whatever. We learn about the what we call the Sefirot of Netzach and Hod, these powers of absolute conviction, faith, and why we lack it. Well, this relationship of heaven and earth is a delicate balance. It's a sacred dance. And it is within us. It is not out there. It is right here. And this is what we must understand. Many a time, somebody in text here is commenting that they perceive that entities are foreign and ghostly and ominous. Well, let me tell you this. There are times we can become sensitive to the presence of other entities. Sometimes they become sensitive to our presence. And we appear as ghostly to them as they might appear to us. So this is always the big deal. With this introduction, I want to explain the relationship and the necessary boundaries of the physical versus what we call, for a lack of a better term, spiritual universe. And the necessary relationship of balance between them. You see, we might want to say, gee, let's have an entire influx of all the spiritual. That would be great. Well, no, it's not. You know something? When we are thirsty, it's really great to have a drink of water. But that's very different from being hit with a tsunami tidal wave. I mean, both the water, yeah, one will revive you and give you life. One will overwhelm you and give you death. There's a big difference between water and water, as we're about to learn. Please keep these things in mind. We are not talking theory. We're talking practice. You, I, we are all subject to this right now. When I talk to you about politics, and I tell you the importance of voting for a righteous man as opposed to a clearly unrighteous man, and you want to argue with me and banter back and forth about this issue and that issue on the vote system. No. Stop the impressions. Stop the feelings. Stop the image. Get down to the essence. Feel deep within if you have any feelings and gut left. We are obligated to do the right thing. We become God's vessel through action. So what I want to share with you now is not theory. It is practice in everything that we must do. Nahazul ma'amareinu. Our text picks up, he says, to get back to its discussion. The six attributes, which we refer to from Tiferet to Malchut, here he calls the Ateret, the crown. This is the secret of what he calls the du partsufim, the duality of faces or the parallel dimensions. Being that now they are separate from one another, right? We say that the higher world, called Tiferet, the heart, is referred to symbolically as the male. And its natural way is to go after the crown, the malchut, this physical world, known symbolically as the female. To extend to her what is called the chut shel hesed, a line of, it's translated as grace, but it's a line of energy, of life. Lashpia la lemalot hesrona. So as to radiate upon her and to fill all that is lacking. She'afilu b'sha'a ha'ka'as. Even at the time of anger, lo yaniach beto lerekam, he does not, it says here, leave his house empty, meaning that there's always a continuity of energy. And I'll explain as soon as we get to the paragraph end here. And he quotes here the Gemara in Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Kaf Gimel Amud Bet, and where it states, Le'olam lo arata hama pegimata shelevana. It has never happened that the sun has seen the blemish in the moon. Which is, he says, Shehu remez l'mashi amarna. This is what we're hinting to. She'im ken yehereva olam. Because if this did happen, the entire universe would be destroyed. She'in la me'atzma ele me'ma she'notnim la. She only has that which is given to her. Kihi ba'it kibul mekabelet min hakol. She is a receiver who receives it all. Vehi mishtokeket l'tiferet. Her desire is to him. Lekabel me'la mala, to receive from above. Ulashpia l'mat l'kol l'nivraim. And then to pass, to give to all that beneath. The parallel universes have a male-female relationship based upon emotion and passion. It is an actual sentient relationship. Even Maimonides writes how planets and stars are sentient conscious beings, self-aware beings. So is the entire universe, and so is another universe. One receives from the other. That is exactly how the Big Bang is. I understand that everything spewed into our universe from somewhere. Parallel universe. It was like a cosmic ejaculation. And that is exactly how it's described in later Kabbalistic literature. And the continuity, the relationship is continuous. Life force energy always flows into us. Why? Because if it were to stop for a moment, bam! Life would cease to exist. That is what it says here, even in the hour of anger. It would not stop. Because ultimately, this is the life force which comes to us. Some refer to it in a different metaphor. And they say that we exist in the thoughts of God. Well, if God were to stop thinking about us for just a second, we'd cease to exist. So, same thing. We live in a symbiotic relationship. Think of it as our universe, as a body and soul, just like our physical bodies are. Well, what would happen if the soul decided to pick up and go? Well, the body would die without it. Same thing with the universe. Same thing with this harmony of this upper and lower realm. Therefore, your question should never be, Rabbi, how can I connect? Because my answer to you will always be, you already are connected. And then my next question to you is, how come you do not perceive it? Like we've been talking about perceptions all this time. Ha'eteret ha'ita min ha'binyan. She'im min ha'zero'ot ad ha'yasod. Now, originally, our universe was part of the higher universe. It literally overlapped it, and it was equal in stature. This is the pre-existence of our universe. What exactly that means, I'm not sure can be described in words. But I'll do my best as I can as we proceed. ומפני שלא היה העולם ראוי להשתמש על ידי היסוד שהוא שבת מנוחה מידת השלום. Being that our world was not worthy to use the pure essence of the yesod, the creative force energy, which we call Shabbat, rest, the attribute of peace. חייבה הוכמתו, the higher wisdom ordained that it should be cast out of the building. I'll explain this when I get to the point. Meaning that the Tiferet, which is the essence of the supernal world, it says will be the head, the cornerstone for that which is below the building. And the Ateret would then descend below and receive from above and receive from that which is above. What on earth am I talking about? This is a very, very interesting teaching. Ultimately, our parallel universes and the present relationship is not the way things are meant to be. There's a big, big secret about this. The Arizal talks about this. This is what we refer to as, we're going to assume we conclude the Hebrew section of this portion here, the secret of the world to come, wherein which we're going to have a comprehensive realignment of these parallel universes. Now, I've spoken to you before how time in the parallel universes, from our point of view, marches from future to the past, ours from the past to the future, and the point they meet is at the point of Mashiach. Well, what happens at that point? Well, does the momentum then stop? No! That is the point of what Mashiach comes. Then the Messianic Age is the, again, reemergence of these universes as they once were. And when that is complete, we have what's called the seventh day, or the resurrection of the dead, the world to come, an entirely different reality from that which we can possibly conceive at this time. Now that's a very interesting thing. How many of you might have ever read one of Arthur C. Clarke's original science fiction stories called Childhood's End? Very interesting little novel. It's a shame it never ever made it to film, to the best of my knowledge. Story, real brief, is aliens come down to Earth, they make peace and all the rest. I'm not going to get into their identities, but they're here for decades and decades, and eventually their purpose is to wait for a generation of humanity to be born with comprehensive psychic ability. It's a children's generation. They relocate them to their own special continent, and ultimately these children are in such a completely different reality that by the power of their comprehensive minds, they literally transform the Earth and blinks out of this world into a different dimension. I know I left out pretty much everything in the story, but that's what it's about. Very, very telling. It's interesting that ultimately our world, our entire universe, the Big Bang, is exactly this separation. Because prior to our universe, they were together as one. So why was there a separation in the first place? Now that's a good question. Let's read on. It states here, it says, quoting here the Midrash Rabbah, that the Shabbat said before the Holy One, blessed be He. I'm actually going to have to finish this to answer the question, but we've got to go through it. Bereshit Rabbah states that the Shabbat, symbolically speaking, of course, says to the Holy One, blessed be He, you know, Ribono Shel Olam, Master, all right? You've given to everything its proper mate. But I have no mate. And the Hashem, God says to the Shabbat, the congregation of Israel, that will be your mate. Meaning, Chayava HaHochma B'din Ke'elu Amra Shabbat. This is a symbolic way of referring to this unique union. Meaning, She'ein HaOlam Kedai L'shtemesh Al Yidei HaYesod Shemidat HaShalom. Our world is not worthy yet to live by this in this attribute of peace. Because if this attitude were to dominate at this time, then what would happen? The created beings would not come into being. Why? Because there would be no ta'ava. There would be no desire. And therefore the world would remain desolate and empty. And the verse says, Ki lo tohu bara l'shevet yitzra. The world was not created in tohu, it was created to be inhabited. Alright, this needs to be explained. The nature of what we call the parallel universe, as I've been emphasizing to you, is different from this universe. And I have to explain it like this. Let us refer to a term, closeness, in Hebrew, yichud. How do we define closeness? Well, there are two ways that we can define closeness. Let's define closeness in the physical world. You can come knock on the door of my office and come in here. We could shake hands. You could sit next to me. And we are close to one another. Are we not? Yes, we are. But now, let's say you can bring someone in here who is a socialist, communist, leftist, liberal, democrat, someone who is anti-Semitic, someone who is anti-American. You could bring them in the room and sit them right here next to me, but how close would we be? The answer is we would be as far away as night is from day, as the heavens from the earth. There would be absolutely nothing in common other than the fact that we are sharing the same space. So therefore, when we define closeness as physical proximity, we're recognizing the definition and nature of this physical universe. Whereas, when we define closeness as similarity, then we are talking about the parallel dimension above. So here is a issue I present to you. If we have powers, for lack of a better word, call them powers of the right, powers of the left, needless to say, they don't agree. There is no similarity between them. They're opposites. How then can opposites in a world wherein which closeness is defined by similarity ever come together when they're diametrically opposed? That, by definition, means that that universe is fundamentally breached. It cannot have what we call yichud, because there is no function, fabric, ability for the opposites dissimilar to come close. And therefore, it necessitated this universe to come forth, to exist under a different structure of natural law, that which we call mass, a slowing of vibration and by definition consciousness, that would enable a physical form to be in existence, and by doing so, needless to say, propagated, so that by the creation of multiple physical forms, we can have vessels for the higher dimensional dichotomy, so that those forces of the right can enter this dimension in physical form, and those entities of the left can enter into this dimension within the same physical vessels. And then the vessels which possess the right and the vessels which possess the left can then physically come together into a point of physical proximity, and therefore the two can interact with one another, even with the sparks and the conflict. But ultimately, what comes together, like we were learning in our previous lessons, right and left come and meet in the center. And if there was no creation of opposites, there could be no center for in which they could integrate. So for the sake of the creation of a center, the opposites had to come into existence. That is what he's referring to here. When the Shabbat, the seventh world, says, hey, who do I bond with? The metaphor is Monday bonds with Tuesday, Tuesday with Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Shabbat says, hey, I got nobody. And then it says Israel, the souls. Those are the souls which come above through the worlds to integrate the Tiferet and the Malchut. This is the secret of what it's referring to here. Now, don't worry about all the metaphors. The metaphors are just an expression of how to get the point across. So, if this universe did not embrace the dichotomy, the duality, but tried to exist in accordance to the higher dimensional plane, then the existence of a lower dimensional plane would never have been fulfilled. It would never be able to fulfill its function to create the opportunity for what we call tikkun, And that is ultimately what he's saying here. Why we need what's called a Yetzer Hara. And the Ben Ish Chai and others say there's a good side to it. Right? Because any time that we strengthen this physical world, some interpret it, well, that's the Yetzer Hara. Well, if it is, so be it. Because it needs to be. For the sake of the creation of the duality and the harmony. And the point was, we receive from above, we pass, and there is a cyclical relationship, and we are all part of that. And it's when we receive for ourselves and don't pass back that blocks the system. If you will, spiritual constipation, which then leads the force of the higher dimension to create a push in the social, political, and economic order to restore things to our natural balance. That's why we have social upheavals in the world. That's why the higher entities speak to the lower entities, which guide, you know, the guardian angels, the watchers, to create upheavals, wars, revolutions, etc. Because we're not willing and able to go with the natural flow of things. Because we're so focused on perception as opposed to content. So when we want to talk about freedom, we're not just talking about a political concept in libertarianism. We're talking about a psychological fundamental principle, which is the foundations of all the Torah. That is what Moses came to preach. Freedom. The founding fathers of these United States, they got that message too. And they put it subtly in everything they're trying to teach. Freedom. And we lose it today. Because we become prisoners again in the mind. He continues to say here, when the days of Mashiach and the future time to come, he says, that's the time when this Yesod power will again spread forth and peace will reign like we've been describing. And then it says that the concealed light of the righteous, that is going to come back, as we have been discussing. Quotes here, the Gemara Tractate Hagigah, which again we discuss in our How to Live a Godly Life class. Or Sheber HaKadosh Baruch Hu Techila Ra'a She'in HaOlam Ra'ui Lishtemesh Bo Gnezu LeTzadikim LeTid Lavo. That the light which Hashem used to create the world, he saw was not appropriate for this world, and therefore concealed it for the righteous in the time to come. And it's going to be revealed after the end of the 6,000 years, at the beginning of the 7,000. Again, the light, the higher world. Why concealed? Because of the necessary need of the creation of opposites so that a harmony can come for them, between them. And this is the entire secret of the relationship of the world. This is why we're here. We have a job. This is referred to in later Arizal literature as the raising of the fallen vessels, the raising of the sparks of holiness, the rectification of the vessels. All the symbolic metaphors I discuss in the Otsrot Chaim series, available, of course, on koshertorah.com. These are not only necessary psychological principles for us to understand, they are also actual realities which define our lives, whether we like it or not, whether we understand it or not, doesn't matter, it's still there. The next section, he says, now let's return and to discuss, he says here, that the world was not worthy to live by this power of this Yesod light, which we call the attribute of peace, because again, if we had this overwhelming light, this overwhelming energy, we would not have been able to have had the congealment into form, thus creating the ability of physical vessels which could embrace opposites and enable those things which are completely distant from one another in similarity to draw close in a world which defines proximity by physical place as opposed to similar in idea. This is the secret of the teaching in Tractate Chulin, It's also referred to elsewhere that the moon said to God, two kings cannot rule with the same crown. And God then says, that's true. Go and make yourself less. Meaning that the world, right, is not worthy, as we said, to continue in this existence. Meaning to exist with a single crown, meaning by one single law of nature. Because if you had one constant form of natural law, you couldn't have a symbiotic relationship. You couldn't have a male and female polarity. What we call Ma and Ben. What the Orientals call Yin and Yang. Okay? Continuing. So therefore, the Tiferet and the Malchut, which we said originally was these two parts of Fim, this duality, could not continue to exist in this present form. Therefore, the symbolic teaching is, God said to the Malchut, what was to become this world, lessen yourself. Meaning, leave the building. Tetzemin binyan, v'taktin atzmech likabel minakli. Leave the building, go outside, so you can receive from the vessel. And you will then become the Rosh Pina Lifobo Olam HaShefa. Therefore, you will then become the head of this new universe, and Yitnehega Olam HaLidei Yesod, and the Yesod will then flow into it, because it can't live completely by it. Now, this is a very interesting teaching. That it was in the relationship of these universes. And remember, just like each and every planet is alive and sentient, conscious, and knows itself and knows God, so it is an entire universe. So when an entire universe, whatever that means, looks and sees its relationship with its parallel, and says, our parallelness is supposed to create a sense of harmony, but it's not! It can't, because we are functioning equally according to laws which make such a yichud union impossible. Therefore, the force above it says to the one, to the other, lessen yourself. Leave the building, as the symbol says. Become mass as opposed to energy. Form as opposed to force. So therefore you can become a vessel to receive, and by the, again, the creation of the new dimension in which we know as this reality of physicality, we then, in our minds and in our deeds which project forth from our minds, create a harmony above. This is why we say, Osei Shalom Bim Romav, he who makes peace in his high heavens, Hu Yaseh Shalom Aleinu, may he make peace upon us. How? Because we are the ones through our words and our righteous deeds bring change to this world. This is why political activism, social activism, being outspoken in wise, proper and successful ways has always been the path of Israel. Whether it was Abraham, whether it was Moses, whether it was King Solomon, whether it was the Maccabees, the sages, the message was always one of outreach, freedom, righteousness, change. The prophets of the Bible yelled and screamed this message over and over and over again. They didn't yell and scream to you and said, this is the doctrine, this is the creed, this is what you believe. You don't hear Isaiah, Jeremiah, and Ezekiel preaching like that. You hear them saying, be righteous, do what's right, be moral, be of high character. All of these things, this is the reality of it. When you read the prophetic Kabbalah of Avraham Abu Lafia, or even the Rashash system of Rav Sharabi, they both concur that whenever we're talking about olamot, worlds, sefirot, partsufim, yichudim, unifications, all the different things, it's all for the sake of what we call yichud zavenok, yichud ma'aben, the union of the small face with the Shekhinah, the union of the Holy One, Blessed Be, and the Shekhinah. This is not a concept, this is a reality. We must bring the higher attributes of balance of righteousness into actuality in this world through the vessels which we have. And if we don't do that, we're not doing squat. So don't you dare look yourself in the mirror, pat yourself on the chest. I am so righteous because I am ethnically religious or I am ritually strict. You are nothing. You have to be politically active, morally righteous, sincere and honest and above reproach. So my words, as the prophet said. This is how we unify the worlds. Let's move on. You know, there's a section here which describes the bringing of a korban, or the sacrifice for Rosh Chodesh. As always, I sometimes go a little over time, so I'm going to describe to you. This is a section we're going to have to cover in our How to Live a Righteous Life section. It's actually from Tractate Hagigah 60b, where in which the source of our metaphor here is why the moon was smaller than the sun. So, I'm looking for the section that I want to quote here. All right, I'm just going to take it from the book here. He says here, now he wants to explain why the story then says that God says, Hiviu alai kapara al shime'ati et hayereach. Let's bring an atonement that God made the moon smaller. Because the moon's complains. Right? Why are you doing this? What did I do? Etc. and so on. So, it says that on every new moon, the sacrifice of a goat, which is like a guilt offering, is given. Why? What does that have to do with anything? It says here, because Rosh Chodesh, the birth of the new moon, symbolically speaking, of course, is the renewal of the feminine attribute corresponding to the male attribute. This is the time of the renewing of its less attribute. What are we talking about here? Obviously, the moon, as we know, as the orbiting ball in space, is not a source of independent light. But yet, on a clear night, when we look up, we see the moon bright and shining. Indeed, timing us right now, we're almost at full moon. Tonight actually is a full moon. For those of you who have a clear sky, see a full moon. Very bright in the sky. I go out at night in a full moon here when it's clear. Gosh, I can see everything at night. It's amazing. It's eerie. It's a profound experience. But what makes the moon grow from darker to light to light to light? This is called receiving the light from the sun to the moon. Okay? So therefore, the process of rebirth, this whole concept of what we're talking about, transforming the world through righteousness, is symbolized in the natural order of things. Symbolized by the moon growing in brightness from complete darkness to light. And it goes through this process. Now, even though our text doesn't discuss this, I'm going to throw it in here anyway. This is also the secret of why a woman has a menstrual cycle. Now, every woman knows from her own body that somehow, somewhere, normally speaking, the human female anatomy is in tune with this natural monthly cycle. I don't know if a woman's period actually relates to different days of the lunar cycle. Only individual women, I guess, can discuss that. But yet they go through a process where, in which, as we know, the womb is ready to receive life. And when it doesn't, it flushes out the old vessel, which was waiting and waiting to become full. And when it doesn't, then it flushes it out to create a new vessel. And that, of course, is the menstrual cycle of the cleansing of the woman's body. She is therefore naturally in touch, because the female of the human species properly calibrates with this energy of this parallel dimension. And that's why women are as women be, and why they are so different psychologically from the male of the species, who is more of the higher universe. Now, does that mean women are lower? God forbid. Just like we've been learning, there is this relationship of balance. Adam and Eve, were it so much actual individuals spoken of in the Garden of Eden, but representatives of a relationship of humanity, which we can call body and soul. Indeed, in the later Kabbalah of the Arizal, when we read in the Shara Psukim, the relationship of Adam and Eve, or the reference to Adam and Eve, is almost identical with the Sephirotic faces of Tiferet and Malchut, or Zah and Milk. They flip-flop back and forth all the time. So, I'm reading something here. Somebody's writing that the natural cycle of a woman's menstrual cycle used to be completely attuned to the cycle of the moon. It is known in groups such as women in prison that the menstrual cycles among the women align with each other. In current society, this has impacted women's cycles, so now they are all different. Okay, well, I, not being a woman, wouldn't know that, but I'm not surprised to hear that. Okay, there is a natural nature to things that we are missing. Now, in the few minutes we have left, I want to move ahead to discuss even another metaphor of the rabbis. Many of you might be familiar with the references in the book of Isaiah and Job to the great reptilian entity Leviathan, which is an actual creature, a real live Godzilla. And I don't mean that symbolically. There's something there. But rather than address the issue zoologically or cryptozoologically of such entity, such a monster like a Leviathan or something called the Behemoth, our sages refer to this also symbolically. So in the tractate Baba Batra, 74b, it states here that even the Leviathan was created male and female. However, if they copulated with one another, they would destroy the world. Alright, so what did Hashem do? It says he castrated the male and killed the female and salted her for the righteous in the time to come. Now remember, this is not literal. This is symbolic. This is a attempt to use these symbols to again reinforce the nature of this relationship in the world that we are discussing about. And he also says here, "Af behemot b'harvei elef," again a reference to the behemoth discussed again in the book of Job. It says, male and female they were created, but if they were allowed to copulate, they would destroy the world. So Hashem, it says here, castrated the male and cooled the female. So he says, now know that the Leviathan was created male and female. Again, this is a secret reference to this Tiferet and Yesod, who are mostly chesed, meaning giving. The higher universe is always giving. Because ha'olam eino kedai lishtemesh al yadam, but the full giving cannot be received in this world. This is what we were referring to. This universe was created, separated from the universe above, so that we can have a comprehensively different description and idea of natural law for the concept of union, of proximity, closeness, and as such, the universes exist, as we know. Now, question. Being that the higher universe has to give to this lower universe for the sake of this rectification, how fast should this process take? How long should it take? How quickly should we allow it to happen? Should we open the floodgates or open the faucet? So, for example, I am thirsty. I want a drink. I take my cup, I open up my faucet, and I fill up a cup of water, and I drink. How about if I open the floodgates of the dam and let all the water of the Hoover Dam flow over me? Would that quench my thirst? How about if we just shook the world and created a tsunami tidal wave, 1,000 feet high? Would that quench my thirst? Water, as I mentioned to you earlier, symbol, enough in the right place is just right. Too much is destructive. That's exactly the reference here. If we were to have too much energy coming from the higher universe, whether in our minds, our bodies, or just fundamentally in the whole universe, this universe would symbolically pop like the proverbial overblown balloon. Think about it like this. Everything has its place, everything has its parameters, everything has its limitations. So therefore, this universe and us in it has its limitations. The human brain organically has its limitations of how much enlightenment, psychology, wisdom it can receive. This is what was meant by the verse in Exodus when God said to Moses, "No man can see my face and live." Moses asked God, "Show me your glory. Let's open up the floodgates. Let my mind take it in." God said, "You know, you're still in a human form. You're still in this lower world. I can fill your cup up. But man, if I open up the floodgates, it's going to be like a tsunami. It'll overwhelm you. It can't be done." Gave him all that he could, and that was it. Originally, Adam, we discussed this in, again, the Godly Life series, had that ability, because prior to what we called the sin, where in which he was in an integrated relationship with the higher world, then indeed everything was able. And again, we will return to that once our job in coming here has been fulfilled. Yes, I'm concealing a big secret about the fallen Eden, about Eve, the tree of knowledge. Yes, I'm concealing a big secret, I confess. If you can read between the lines between what I'm saying, you will understand something very profound. And if you can't, well, pray to God, and I guess that's his job to show things. Moving right along. Okay? This is the reference symbolically of the Leviathan, right? That it had to kill the female and hold its meat for the light to come, meaning that this yesod energy that the righteous bring into this world with a full cup of water, using our symbolism, will await them in full when the time comes. And the behemoth, again, this is also a reference here. He says here, this is the secret of what we call the waters. All right? You have what's called the attribute of severe judgment, which is called the great fire. This is the secret of the bull of the Merkabah. And then the secret of what's called the lesser fire, Din Rafa, lesser judgment. This is the source of the Malchut. All right? What he's getting at here, he says this is the lesser fire. This is why it says that God cooled the female, meaning by the power of water. Let me explain. He says fire and water, you mix and you balance it out. To sum things up in the short time that we have here, he again is using the metaphor of the behemoth, which was different with the Leviathan. Leviathan, remember, he chopped off the male and killed the female. With the behemoth, it says he chopped off the male but cooled the female. Again, a symbolic reference to the nature of energy and its flow from above to below. He makes a reference here to one of the dangers of this physical world, which is to solidify things in very rigid structure. That's the nature of things. Our world is defined by rigid structure. That's called din kashe, all right? Strict judgment or harsh, heavy fire. Well, when we receive the light of the Yesod world, the parallel universe, which makes us tolerant, understanding, flexible, fluid, changing our perceptions. Remember, we live in a quantum universe where reality is defined through our perceptions. Change your perceptions and you change your reality. When you limit your perceptions because you're brainwashed and hypnotized, you have locked the world in rigid judgment. And like I said, when that happens, nature has to unlock the spiritual constipation. And that's when we have upheavals. So, again, symbol after symbol after symbol. The point of the symbolism is to explain to us the realities of the world in which we live. So, a thought is in my head, an image, a picture, a mind. I actually learned this, of all places, from Bruce Lee. And I actually looked it up in its original Buddhist source, and it's a good metaphor, which I guess if it's in my mind, then I guess it's appropriate for me to share with you now, so I will. It is said that a teacher wishes to instruct his student to give him a lesson about the moon in the sky. So he takes his finger and points to the moon and gives the student the instruction. And the student is looking and looking and looking and looking. And the student and the teacher turns to the student and says, "What do you look at?" He says, "I'm watching you point to the moon." And he says, "Do not mistake my finger for the moon." What does that mean? Don't get caught up in the symbolism, in the metaphors. Get the essence of the message of what it's all about. The essence within the structure, the light within the vessel. Penetrate beyond the form into the force. Release it from its prison. It was placed here into form, not to imprison it, but to enable it to be fluid so that it can merge with other elements of force to create the Yehud in the higher worlds. This is only accomplished like the prophets said, like Abraham showed, like Moses, like Solomon, like the sages, by activism. You will never create a unity above if you are not active in creating unity below. Someone here is commenting, "Don't concentrate on the moon, you'll miss all the heavenly glory." Forget the glory of heaven. I know those were Bruce Lee's words. Remember the purpose of earth. That is the true heavenly glory when it is applied properly. Please understand, this is not philosophy, this is not psychology, this is actuality. And if we don't put this in deed, then we are not learning the message of what this is all about and what all these symbols were here to teach. That is what we need to focus on, which I must emphasize is mucho importante. So whether we're talking about the face of the bull in the Merkabah, which is that severity, that strictness and form, and what we're talking about, the behemoth, the leviathan, the relationship of the male and the female, all of these are symbols. This whole concept of the lessening of the moon, the offering of the sacrifice on Rosh Chodesh for the sake of the balance of heavens and the earth, all of this relates back back and forth and forth and back, so that the light which was originally concealed was concealed for a purpose to be revealed, so that it can create the unity which is necessary. And we can only do this indeed. Talk is cheap. Actions is the true definition. When the prophet Habakkuk said, the righteous live by their faith, unbeknownst to many, the Talmud, Tractate Makot, said, pretty much if you sum up the entire Torah into one commandment, the commandment would be the righteous live by their faith. But the faith of the righteous is not a doctrine or a creed or a philosophical structure. It's not a catechism. It's what you do and how you do it. And if you are not politically and socially active, voting for the right candidates, living the right lifestyle, supporting the right message, then you're just not doing that. Your perceptions have been skewered, and you're not seeing things in the right balance, the natural balances need be. I leave it at that. My blessings to us all, that we should realign the heavens and the earth and create what we call the Yehud, the unity. It's not what we think, it's what we do. Thank you all for joining me. God be willing to see you all in our next class. I'm Ariel Bartzadok. See you on LanaKosherTorah.com. Shalom.